There's a passage in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, and verse 1. It says, "Again, I looked and I saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of the oppressors, and they have no comforter." It's a common theme throughout the Old Testament, particularly the prophets, but also the New Testament. This idea that, and it's amazing, particularly if you read the prophets, how much God's heart goes out to the poor, goes out to the oppressed, he goes out to the widows, it goes out to the outcast. God has a heart for the underdog. And we see that in the ministry of Jesus as well, do we not? And Luke particularly is known as a gospel that talks about the underdog. There's more about women and children and outcast type people in the book of Luke than any of the other gospels. And as we then turn to the book of Luke, tonight we want to look at the last story in Luke chapter 18 and the first story in Luke chapter 19. The last story, Luke 18, is about the oppressed one. Luke chapter 19 tells us then about the oppressor. And the shocking part of the stories is that Jesus loved them both. Shouldn't Jesus oppose the oppressor? Can Jesus oppose the oppressor and still comfort the oppressor? Perhaps a way that is commonly used today to word it, can he still love the sinner but not the sin? It wasn't until the 4th century that your Bibles that you see it now was chapters was put into it. And so when this was originally written, there was no chapter break. It immediately went from the story of Bartimaeus into the story of Zacchaeus. And I think we've probably missed something because of that chapter break. And I want to look tonight at how those two are pieced together as the oppressed and the oppressor. So let's read the story of this blind man. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." He called out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Now those who led the way rebuked him. They told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped. He ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" "Lord, I want to see," he replied. Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they also praised God. Now just real quick, because we have more time on Sunday night, I just kind of wanted to throw this in there. And you'll see this a lot of times in people who interact with Jesus. There's almost a progression from understanding him as a man to understanding him as God. And you see that in this story as well. The crowd calls him simply Jesus of Nazareth, Bill of Bentonwood. It's just kind of he's a man and here's who he's from. Verse 38, though, the beggar calls him Jesus, the Son of David, a messianic term. In verse 39, he again calls him the Son of David. By the time we get to verse 41, he's been called Lord. In verse 43, then they're praising God because of what they see in Jesus. That was just a side note. That wasn't the sermon. Let's look at these verses, kind of break it down a little bit. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. You notice that Jesus is approaching Jericho. He hasn't got there yet. He's just simply approaching the town, but there's already a crowd with him. It was typical at that day and time in that culture when an honored guest would come to town. At Jesus, at this point in time, is an honored guest in Jericho. They would typically meet him outside of the city they would escort him into the city, and when he was ready to leave, they would escort him partially outside of the city. I don't know how to describe that in our world today. This is probably isn't that good, but it's the best I could come up with. When the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl, I imagine when they landed their planes in Seattle, there was probably a lot of fans there to greet them at the airport. I see the looks on your face, so you come up with a better one then. But it was just the culture of that day. You know, it was before TVs, before radios, before the internet, before smartphones. It was just a different way of life. And it was exciting when somebody who was esteemed would come into our town. And so they would meet him, bring him in. In fact, there was usually a banquet that would be prepared in his honor. And he would be expected to spend the night partaking of the town's hospitality. And so the crowd is out there as Jesus is approaching Jericho. And there's a blind guy, and he's beside the road, and he's begging. And he's crying out for help. Now, he hears this crowd coming by, so he kind of naturally asks, what's going on? They told him Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. So he called out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Now, there's probably some of you that are very familiar with the term Son of David. But do you realize it's somewhat of a rare term used in the Gospels when people interact with Jesus? It's really not found that often. And it's clearly a messianic term. When he says Son of David, he's saying, you are the Messiah. You are the one who's the heir coming from David that we've been expecting. You are the chosen one that we've been looking for hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't know about you, but it makes me wonder. That was pretty quick. Has this guy heard Jesus before? Or has he heard about Jesus before? I would think there's something going on before this. It's one thing to cry out for help, but it's another to say, you are the chosen one of God. Now, we're reading Luke's account. Mark calls him Bartimaeus. Matthew says there's actually two blind beggars there. But we're going to center in on Luke's account to this blind man who understands, at least in part, who Jesus is. Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. And I'll be honest, for a long time when I said those who led the way, I thought it must be the apostles because they haven't got into town yet, and so he's with his group of apostles, so the apostles are the rebukers. Boy, that was pretty sad. But again, digging more into culture and realizing the town would have, at least part of the town would have gone out to lead him in, we're probably talking about the leading people of the town. Now, I want you to think about this because it's easy to miss. The leaders of this town, in this religiously connected, honored guest, are telling this person who's sitting over here, be quiet. We are busy with Jesus. This is our time, not yours. It's very important that we see the rebuke of the crowd on this beggar. Now, I also came across a quote by Kenneth Bailey. He said, the spiritual outcast, unable to help themselves, far more readily recognized the Messiah and asked for his help than did the Jewish religious leaders. And again, it's kind of going with our theme here in the last month or so. It's the religious people who are close to home who are not getting it and keeping others who are really seeking. It's the crowd. It's the religious people that are keeping them out. Mark uses some very strong Greek language. Very strong. About telling this blind man to be quiet. Jesus stopped He ordered. How often do you read that about Jesus? Giving orders. He ordered the man to be brought to him. Jesus commanded. And commanded whom? To bring the blind man. The very people who was keeping him out. Do you see that? As a crowd's going by, that blind beggar, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. Jesus stopped, said, hey, you. He didn't just say, Bartimaeus, come to me. He told the people who were keeping him out, you go and you bring him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, what do you want me to do for you? Okay, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand because it might be embarrassing if you did. But how many of you think that's a bad question for Jesus to ask? The man is blind and he's begging, and Jesus said, what do you want? I mean, you can almost read that like that's a little bit heartless, isn't it? Out of Jesus? What do you think he wants? But let's stop and think about this for just a moment. Again, different culture. Beggars were very much a part of their culture. How many of you ever have traveled to a different country when you've seen that type of culture just being normal? You saw beggars in different parts that you've come across. All right, several of you have. And it's just, that's part of society. And in the culture in the first century in Palestine, there's a little bit of difference. Beggars typically didn't say, can you spare a few coins? Could you just spare a little bit to help me out? Usually what they would say, give to God. Give to God. You see, as a beggar, I'm giving you an opportunity to fulfill your obligation to God. You see, particularly the Jews knew, and again has been emphasized throughout the prophets, about helping the poor. And the beggars, as they understood that, would be more of give to God, fulfill your obligation to God. And they would usually sit in a very public place. And when someone would come by and give to them, then they would cry out loudly about what such an honorable person you were, and what a great thing you have done for God. You know, it's a great way to get some public recognition about what a good person you were. And so I just want you to see that when this beggar, or when Jesus says, what do you want? This is a little bit different here. Let's say he receives his sight. Then what? He has probably not had any kind of education. He's probably not had any kind of training. What's his employment record? What's his resume look like? I begged from this spot, from these years, and I begged from this spot and this year. What kind of marketable skills does he have? You see, as he receives his sight, he's going to be in for quite the challenge on how to support himself. I just want to remind you of a quote that I used this morning from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Grace is free, but it's not cheap. It will change your life. Lord, I want to see, he replied. And Jesus said to him, receive your sight. Your faith has healed you. Did you catch it? What faith? What faith? Did he make some loud declaration about faith and about, well, maybe it was in the Son of David? How has this man expressed his faith? What great deed has he done as he took a step of faith? Here's what he's done. He believed. He believed that Jesus actually had the power to heal him. And not only did he believe that Jesus had the power, here's the part that catches us. He also believed that Jesus had the compassion that he would actually do it. He's very confident that he is the Son of David, that he is Lord, that he can heal. And it began because it's Sunday night, we have a little extra time. I just want to throw in, you see that last word, your faith has healed you? Is that word healed or saved? There's probably some of you having one of your translations the word saved. The Greek word is sozo. It's found 106 times in the New Testament, that Greek word. 85 out of 106 times, it's translated saved. Almost 90% of the time, it's translated saved. 13 out of 106 times. Only 13 out of 106 times is it translated healed. Healing is within that word, saved. Hopefully you'll think a little bit about our lesson this morning as well, as we separate this physical and spiritual. Where did that come from? They're all tied together in my life with the Lord. Immediately, as is often with Jesus' miracles, he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they also praised God. Now, if possible, and I know you would never do this to me, if you've checked out for a little while, would you come back? I want you to really hear this. The crowd praised God. Jesus sided with the oppressed, the blind man. Who was oppressing the blind man? The crowd. The people who had gathered as close as they could to Jesus are the very people that was oppressing that man and told him to be quiet. Now, whether it be because we weren't close to Jesus, and if we let you then we've got to take a step back. Or whether it's we have our needs, or we have our times, or we have our request, and you'll have to wait till later. Or if it was, you know, we're the leading people of the town, and you're just a beggar. Whatever it was, this crowd of religious people had become the oppressors and probably didn't even realize it. And Jesus is striving to change them by saying, you go and get the blind man and you bring him here. And when Jesus did heal him, the crowd who had marginalized the beggar, the crowd that had told him to be quiet, the crowd that was keeping him from Jesus, in a sense repented and praised God for what had just happened. I know there are some differences here, but if you've been with us in this series, the older brother just took a step to change. Unfortunately, it's going to be temporary. Let's look at our next story. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. Y'all remember we're in the same story? Ignore the chapter, ignore the number 19 there, that's man-made. We're in the same story. As he's coming into town, he heals the blind man, the crowd is praising God. As he enters then into Jericho, and he's passing through, he's not planning on staying. As he's passing through, there's a man there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and he climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter. Y'all remember that's one of my favorite words in the New Testament? He muttered, and he had gone to be the guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possession to the poor. If I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost." I'm just going to again throw this in. Some of you have been with us in this cultural series. Again, what we find here is a ring composition where one parallels 9, two parallels 8. And if you keep doing that, you see at the center what the whole point of the story is. When you look at that, you see at the beginning Jesus comes, at the end is his mission. You see right between that, Zacchaeus, he's spending his wealth on himself, but in the end he's spending his wealth for others. You see the crowd hostile. You see the crowd angry. You see Zacchaeus up the tree. You see him coming down the tree. And right in the middle of that is the whole point of the story. Jesus' costly love. When Jesus says to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So we can make a lot of guess about all the lessons that we can learn, but what the writer's telling us, if you don't get anything else, get this. This is the point. And what we're going to witness is that the crowd who had kept the beggar away, who is now praising God, who's now as angry at Zacchaeus, Jesus is going to take the crowd's anger towards Zacchaeus and put it on himself. Watch how this happens. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd. There it is again. The crowd is keeping people from seeing Jesus. That's so hard to see within ourselves. But we see it throughout the New Testament. We see it throughout the world today. Religious people, Christians, churches are actually keeping people from Jesus instead of bringing them. Jesus is with the crowd. And just like they kept the blind man from Jesus, and even though they had repented and praised God, this time, Jesus went too far. He went too far. A blind man is one thing. A tax collector? Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham." This man too is a son of Abraham. No, he's not. No, he's not. He traded that card in. Have you seen the way he's lived his life? You know, it's one thing to be an oppressor, but this guy is an oppressor of God's people. Do you understand the widows in this town who have suffered because of this man? Do you understand the poor people who are striving to feed their family, and yet this man came in and abused them by his overzealous tax collecting? Jesus, do you not understand what kind of life this man has led? Do you not understand what kind of an oppressor he has been? Can you hear the crowd crying that out? And Jesus says, "Why don't you take a different look at him? Is he an oppressor? Absolutely. Let's ask it this way. Is he a sinner? Are you surprised that this sinner acts sinful?" You know, if you think about it, in the church, that still shocks us. that sinful people act like sinners. You would think they would know better. All the people saw this and they began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." Now, there's much to be said here. In fact, next Sunday morning, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Zacchaeus from a different perspective. But I want to center in on this cultural aspect, because this crowd had assumed hospitality for their honored guest. Now, if you can think about this, we've got this honored guest coming to town. We go out and we meet him outside of the town limits. We bring him in, and we're very disappointed. In fact, we're just even a little bit offended that he's not spending the night and eating with us. But okay, and we begin to escort him out of town. But when we escort him out of town, he meets our worst citizen. And he accepts hospitality from him. You see, he was just passing through, verse 1. He's refused their hospitality. But when he reached the spot, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, come down. I must stay at your house today." He not only refused our hospitality, he initiated hospitality with that man. "Jesus, you've gone too far." And what Jesus did is he took the crowd's hostility against Zacchaeus and took it upon himself. Do you see that? Boy, I don't know how long it took him from walk to this side of town to the other side of town, because Jericho is not a huge city. But look at all that happens as he comes in. He's greeted warmly. He stops. He heals the blind man. He walks through the town. The crowd are singing God's praises. And now they've turned on him because he accepted a man by the name of Zacchaeus. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." Is that the worst thing that could be said about us? Do you believe that church over there? Do you see who they let get in their doors? I am shocked the roof didn't cave in. Jesus, friend of sinners. He's certainly a friend of the oppressed. How often do you read of the blind, the lame, the crippled, even the dead, and how Jesus blesses them and helps them? But did you also realize that he is the friend of the oppressor? And that's hard. He's the friend of the people that the church is keeping away. He's the friend of the people that the older brother would have nothing to do with. And it's amazing that this religious crowd kept out the blind man and also kept out Zacchaeus from seeing Jesus, when our role is actually to show people who Jesus is. I just wanted to throw this in as well. Do you realize the timing of this and how close the Passover is? I find that so ironic. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He passes through Jericho. He'll travel to Jerusalem. And there he'll be crucified and raised from the dead. Why? Because the Son of Man came. This is why I came. To seek and to save what was lost. That's a purpose statement. He did many things while he was here. But that's his purpose. If that's his purpose, that's our purpose. I'm going to close by sharing you just a story that I just saw recently. It was about Martin Luther King Jr.'s father, Martin Luther King Sr. A few years after Martin Luther King was assassinated, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution interviewed his father about several things, and at the end of the interview, they ask about the obvious bitterness and hatred that he must have in his heart towards the person responsible for his son's death. Here's what he said. "I have no room in my heart for bitterness, hatred, and unforgiveness because I am a Christian. And Jesus Christ lives in my heart and fills it. And he leaves no room for anything else." I love that. Let Jesus fill our heart, and there's no room for bitterness, for anger, for judgment. There's no room to be an older brother. Our arms are simply open. We're going to be the crowd whose arms are open to the blind and to the tax collectors. And we're going to welcome them home just like we were welcomed home. We again ask that if we can help you in any way in this journey, we so often need each other. If we can pray for you, if we can help you in any way, just come and share how we can help you as we stand and sing this song.